This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
We're going to start this hour, though, with a woman who's done a phenomenal job covering this volatile time, if you will, in college athletics the last 9 or 10 days. Nicole Auerbach of The Athletic rejoins us here on Packer and Durham this morning from Chicago. Nicole, I'm going to start this in a way that I started a lot of interviews here in the last 6 months. What do you think we learned a year ago that we're going to apply this year? Because it seems like, in some respect, with some of the mandates and things like that coming back into play in some of these states, we might be back in that business again of having to check on the virus before we play football in September.
Despite everything that's going on in college sports, something that's on the front burner with a lot of people. And I've got a story that's coming early next week, just kind of outlining all the policies around that. And, you know, obviously we've been hearing a lot about leagues that are going to not make up games. There's no extra time to make up games. So there's going to be leagues coming out and straight up saying, like, these will be forfeits. If it's something that you could control and your team isn't vaccinated to a high enough threshold, then you have contact tracing and you're unavailable to play. This was something that was widely available and an opportunity for you to take control over something this year that didn't exist last year. And so I think, you know, people are really trying to do that because they do want to have the least amount of disruptions as possible and get through the season. So that is absolutely something that is on everyone's mind. I mean, you've seen the SEC put out PSAs and Nick Saban and everybody. So there is the hope that there will be a more normal season. But that's one piece that will determine that in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and Jim Phillips mentioned last week in Charlotte, the medical advisory group of the ACC, Dr. Cam Wolf of Duke, chairing that group, is going to meet next week. And then from that point on, the ACC will have some established guidelines. Okay, let's go back here to the last 9 days, because you and I were exchanging texts this week, and I think you were one of the first people to talk about and write about the relationship college athletics is kind of walking through here. A year ago, when we were trying to play the football in the pandemic, we were trying to play fall sports, conferences were saying, yes, we're in, no, we're out. Then, oh, by the way, yes, we're in again in the case of the Big Ten. It appeared that the five commissioners at the time, and I realized John Swofford was still at the ACC and Larry Scott was still at the Pac-12. It seemed they had a great collegial attitude of working together, very collaborative about how they were going to try and do this, and they were able to get football played. Where do you think that relationship is now in the last 9 days, given the realignment?
it's a good question, because there is just a sense of mistrust throughout all of college sports right now. I mean, I think you throw in a couple of different dynamics. You know, a lot of people are really fixating and focusing on the fact that SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey and Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlsby were on this four-person working group looking at playoff expansion, meeting periodically over the last 2 years to put this together. And one of them was obviously aware that they were going to have a really great opportunity to add Oklahoma and Texas from the other guy, who was unaware in that environment. And then, you know, they put it out, and Bowlsby gives credit to Sankey for being, you know, collaborative, being willing to do that because it's for what's best in college football and not just for what's best for SEC. Even now we know, you know, you look back and all this stuff is colored a little bit differently. And so I think that a lot of people are talking about the dynamics of that, working alongside someone on a project like expansion, where people have different information. The way that new Pac-12 commissioner George Gladkoff put it to The Athletic was imperfect information, and people should be operating with the same information in that type of setting. And then, you know, again, just in general, is this what's best for college football? You know, just consolidating more power in the Southeastern Conference, you know, you'd argue no. So there's just a lot of people throughout the country who don't like the move, that do fear, you know, the eventual formation of like a super league, you know, 30 plus teams or something, you know, just continue to stockpile for the SEC. as in an era where the NCAA has been weakened and fragmented and is talking about decentralizing its power, the SEC is definitely positioning itself for whatever could come next to basically to chart its own course and control its own destiny. That's absolutely true. But there's a lot of people throughout college sports who are, the trust is shaken. The way that all this went down, knowing the relationships between people within the Big 12 and Bob Bowlesby and other Big 12, athletic directors and presidents, like, there's just a lot of people who are blindsided and really hurt by this. And then a lot of people in the rest of the country are concerned about motivations and the way things go down. So the SBS commissioner call was supposed to happen, a regularly scheduled one yesterday. It got canceled. We've seen Bob Bowlesby and the pointed attacks he's made, pointed language he's made about the SEC and the American. So this isn't going to die down anytime soon in terms of the trust and the mistrust.
All right, and I'm going to go back to that room with those commissioners in it. And now let's say we've got to try and get through this college football season. You think they can have the same amount of success? I mean, Greg Sankey indicated in a quote to Heather Dinich that he feels like they can continue to work together again. And you mentioned George Kliavkoff, who's the new commissioner of the Pac-12. Jim Phillips, the new commissioner of the ACC. You're putting two more integers into that room that weren't there a year ago in some respect, I guess.
Yeah, that's an interesting wrinkle to this because, the Big Ten, ACC, and the Pac-12 have all had major turnover in that room and have not gone through something like this period of college sport. Two of them, obviously, Kevin Warren and George Kliavkoff, didn't have college sports background. So it's very interesting to see how that changes the dynamics of the room and how meetings go and who makes moves. I do think those three leagues probably need to stay united and aligned in their views on, the timeline for playoff expansion and beyond. So to just, kind of put that checks and balances with the SEC right now. But in general, I think they will get through a football season, sure. They're going to have meetings about the playoff, and they're going to have meetings as commissioners. Like, that stuff will start up again. I think right now there's a lot of hurt feelings and a lot of anger, but that's not with everyone. I think people are going to just be skeptical of each other, and, you got to figure out who to trust. This is something that, happens when we've had past rounds of realignment, right? Like, you have all these high-ranking school officials trying to decide, like, do we do what's best for me, number one, or do we feel an obligation to our conference? Do we see, it's just this push and pull of self-interest versus like thinking about what's best for others or what's best for college sports as a whole. Cause that's something that's also come up, Wes, a lot in my conversations, is just that no one is thinking about what's best for college athletics right now. Like, that people are just, it's about greed and people are just following the money, which wasn't what a lot of these folks got into college sports for. It's a weird business model, because it's football, men's basketball that kind of subsidize everything else. But the people who work in this space want to provide those opportunities to have broad-based sports and to have, opportunities for female athletes. And, like, that's stuff that they really care about. That's why they got into this field. And so it's making a lot of people uncomfortable that, you have a move from, two of the biggest brands in college sports that are making plenty of money in their past league to do this, right? So overall, it's just a very tough time. People are really going through a lot of feelings right now.
Yeah. I want to dive into an angle you touched on a moment ago, and that's athletic directors. And Mark and I've talked about it throughout the spring and summer. The ACC is probably fortunate right now in the gathering of this particular athletic director group, and I'll put Jack Swarbrick in it, even though this is a football-centric discussion, that 1-15, the ACC's got its best grouping of athletic directors, maybe its most talented grouping of athletic directors it's ever seen in the conference's history. How valuable an asset is that right now to the ACC, given all the things that have happened around it in other conferences?
Oh, extremely valuable. Again, some of these decisions, as we learned last year in COVID, which also kind of sometimes contributes to the disjointedness, is that like presidents end up making decisions, not athletic directors. So they're coming at it with a little bit different angles. But The ADs and the ACC, a lot of them have worked together for a really long time or worked together in other places. That was part of this when Jim Phillips joined the league. There were so many ADs who were thrilled because they knew him really well. They had worked with him a lot. That type of thing is going to be really important because, again, if trust is the main issue right now, that people are not sure they can trust everyone that they previously did because of, you know, a major decision that caught, you know, a lot of people by surprise, then that matters. So those previous relationships matter, especially when you're thinking about, okay, does the SEC eventually have an end game here of getting even larger than 16? Do we need to focus on, you know, do we want to expand? Do we want to make sure we just stay put and are stronger than ever as the ACC? What are we doing to make sure, you know, Clemson is not going to jump if the SEC calls, right? Like all of those types of macro conversations, you do need to have that trust in the room. And you have a lot of athletic directors in this league who have been athletic directors for a long time in this era of college sports who really understand the moving pieces, have been through rounds of realignment before. That's really, really valuable.
All right. I want to finish on this thought, or at least on this particular sequence. You mentioned the NCAA is its most vulnerable. How vulnerable and can it survive from what we've learned here in the last year?
Depends what you mean by survive, because I think that someone's always going to have to handle some administrative stuff and eligibility or enforcement or whatever that looks like, as well as, you know, championships for non-football events. Does the NCAA eventually get to a point where that's all it does? It's possible. I think, you know, you had Mark Emmert say decentralized, talk about maybe individual sports are governed separately by those sports. You know, maybe there's more things the conferences can decide directly. You know, those are all vague. I do think in the next couple of weeks, we're going to get more information about some specifics or at least some constitutional NCAA constitutional changes that will shed some light on this. But yeah, I mean, it's trending in that direction. In light of the Supreme Court basically said to the NCAA, like, hey, you can't just add all of these random restrictions on stuff because you're not above the law. So they're going to have to pull back because of that. They don't want to get sued again. They don't want more legal exposure. So therefore, we are trending in that direction. And I think that's part of why people around the country think the SEC just did what it did, because it's thinking, okay, if football is eventually going to be kind of its own thing, run on its own, continue to grow, like we want to be the ones running that. We want to position ourselves to have power in this world, to make decisions and not let the NCAA or the courts make decisions for us. So people are operating in that way, that the NCAA will continue to, you know, lose influence, lose power. But I don't think anyone thinks it's going to go entirely away, because there are a couple of administrative pieces that no one else would really want to do on their own.
Yeah, interesting point. And one that has not been discussed, and that's just the bookkeeping of the organization. Yeah. In the world we're walking in, the next big timeline or the next big milepost is going to be this work of the College Football Playoff Committee and its listening tour, for lack of a better term, where they're going around student-athletes, presidents, FARs, ADs, whatever, football coaches. We heard two of the most prominent coaches in the ACC, Dabo Swinney and Mack Brown, both say they don't need the 12-team playoff. And their players don't think they need the 12-team playoff, I guess. Do you think student-athletes could move the needle on the 12-team proposal and we're at 8 or we're back at 4 when this is resolved?
I would love to say yes, that the input from the actual players would be listened to. However, I think that the ship has kind of sailed, and I think that you're going to hear from a lot of other current players, like, we'll do whatever. We want to play for a championship. It was very interesting to talk to a couple former Ohio State players recently who played in the playoff in the beginning when everyone was like, oh, they added a game, they're up to 15. Just talking about the wear and tear and how real that is, and how after playing in the NFL, they can compare different things because of the length of the season. And it's a lot. And I wish that, like, some of the things that have been frustrating for me personally about the playoff expansion timeline this summer is I wish that sort of conversation with players and, like, the direct, even coaches and strength coaches, I wish that would have happened before they unveiled the model, and they wanted to be secretive. They wanted all the fanfare. But it does feel really hard to like then backtrack to go back to something less than 12. So I don't know. I mean, I certainly think it will inform Jim Phillips' stance on stuff and also some of these details. Again, if playoff expansion slows down here and because people want to see the fallout from realignment, because people aren't really sure about how Greg Sankey went about this in the working group, then you do have time to work through some of these issues, or at least, you know, again, how you're going to structure it to try to make sure that the wear and tear is as little as possible for the players. So, it's possible if this thing ends up waiting until 2026, that some of these issues that these coaches and players have could be addressed, even if they do end up staying with a similar framework.
Yeah, great stuff. Nicole, thank you. Wonderful work in last week. Be well. We'll see you soon. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Wes.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Well, one of the real highlights of last week's coverage of the ACC kickoff in Uptown Charlotte was the headline marquee group of quarterbacks that showed up. Everybody, every school, with the exception of Syracuse, brought a quarterback to the table, and that's okay. The Orange, they got a quarterback controversy going on, quarterback challenge and competition going on. Not a controversy, because it's either going to be Jacobian Morgan, Tommy DeVito, or Garrett Schrader for Dino Babers on opening night in Athens, Ohio. But the real marquee position was QB. And we talked to all of them in some form or fashion. And here's a taste of some of the conversations we had with the ACC QBs.
What's this like? This is a little different deal today, isn't it?
No, it's definitely a little different deal than Clemson. I mean, doing all these interviews is super cool. I mean, I'm just trying to take it all in. It's super cool seeing all these different lights. I'm on live TV right now.
Yeah.
But it's super cool.
You said you got the secret agent thing in your ear and everything. Yeah.
I feel like I'm a secret agent with this little earpiece in my ear. This is super cool.
All right. So here's where we are. Now, imagine this being the new experience.
Yes, sir.
First time. Now, you started 2 ball games last year.
Yes, sir.
How much benefit is there that to what you're getting ready to do, you know, come Uptown Charlotte about 4 blocks from here on September the 4th?
I think it was a huge advantage to be able to get to start 2 games, just get my feet wet, get to play against 2 great teams, Boston College here, and then get to play against Notre Dame. So, I mean, it was just a great experience to get out there and play, even though we didn't win both games. It was super cool for me just be out there, get to go through a starting lineup, like a whole week of, like, preparations being a starting quarterback. So, yeah. It was really cool.
Talked about a lot of different of the big football topics, and we heard yesterday that something that came out, or I guess the day before yesterday, was that you guys had some conversations, and Dabo had some conversations with y'all about college football playoff expansion, and are they for or against 12 team? Can you just share kind of some of those conversations with us and how you guys feel and kind of came to that? I'm sure it's not everybody. It's split, yeah. Right? You can't sum up how a whole group feels in one sentence.
I mean, I just found out about it last night at dinner. We were talking about it, that they want to do, I think, the 12 team expansion, right, for college football playoffs. I mean, I don't know too much about it. I don't really have an opinion on it. I'm not sure what to do. I know, and for me, I have absolutely no clue. I think that would be a great idea, though, to have 12 teams and be able to make the college football playoffs. But, I mean, it's whatever the league wants or whatever the college football playoffs wants, too.
What are we going to see this year as a result of those guys departing and new guys like Mitchell being involved and the other guys you can get the ball to on the perimeter?
Well, I'm not going to lie. Y'all probably won't believe me when I say this, but you're going to see a lot more speed this year on the outside especially and in the backfield. It's just good to have those weapons. We have a lot of new faces, a lot of guys that y'all aren't familiar with, but I'm very familiar with those guys, and I can't wait for them guys to show to the world what they have to bring to the table.
We're going to run that back one more time. You said more speed than we saw last year.
Yeah.
Man, I'm excited to see that.
Did you ever think you wouldn't play again?
I mean, there would be some doubts. I won't lie to you. There's some doubts at times, you know, when I was making progress and then I got an infection in my leg. I just couldn't get range of motion back in my knee for a long, long time. And you know, I just knew, like, if I wouldn't get that range back, I wouldn't be able to play. But eventually I did. So at times I'll say doubts crept in, but I never let myself go all the way to that dark place completely. I always had faith that, you know, really answered prayer. You know, God would see me through. And, you know, I had a great medical staff at UCF, great medical staff here, and definitely wasn't all by me. Had a great team around me, and here I am. So
yeah.
No, it's great. Yeah.
You were very hard on yourself with the last game of the season and how you finished throwing those four interceptions. Went so far as to say your family left you there in Charlotte after the game. Can you elaborate on the learning experience and what seemed to be a one-off given your consistent performance all last year?
Yeah, I mean, it's just life. You know, you have those gut-wrenching moments in life, and it's all about learning from them. And I know I learned more about my mental than I did physical. Like you said, kind of a one-off physically, but mentally, you know, just kind of getting that place where, you know, I hit my point of no return. And, you know, it was unconsolable in the locker room. And it was nice, though. Like, a guy like Ja'Cory came up to me after the game and really told me, hey, like, it happens. You know, we all made mistakes that game. It's not on you. It's not your, you know, it was my fault. But they said it wasn't my fault. It made me feel a little better.
You're still being hard on yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Just a part of my human nature. But, no, I just have learned a lot about, you know, mentally being able to prepare myself for, you know, I'm going to throw more picks. I'm going to throw incompletions. I'll make bad reads. But, you know, it's all about that next play. And you know, with guys like Ja'Cory and guys, you know, all across the board on our lineup, I'm excited for it.
The big question that you're getting asked all day long that we have to ask again is, how are you feeling?
I feel great. You know, I think they had a really good plan for me. Trainers and physical therapists I work with had a really good plan for me, and I've just been falling into the tee. I feel pretty good. Still taking it day by day, but I feel great right now.
I knew that was a shocking question for you.
Yeah, it was. It was really didn't see the fastball coming, right? EJ talked about this earlier when we started our program today, D'Eriq. Your ability in the spring to stay connected with the team. You know, everybody had some fun with, I know Matt Berry and Mike Golic Jr. were talking about you coaching and calling plays in the spring game and things. Yep. But there's a little method to the madness there, right? I mean, sure. What did you learn? What were the biggest benefits for D'Eriq King on the field coming from D'Eriq King off the field this spring?
Yeah, you know, kind of looking at it like in a different perspective, right? So you're always looking at it from the player's perspective, but, you know, sitting in coaches' meetings, you know, being a coach last year a lot more, learning what they talk about in their meeting and just kind of seeing it both ways. So, you know, me just sitting back and just learning as much as I can during that time.
By the way, the Zubas on point.
Yeah, pretty hard. Yeah.
Yeah, you like that, right?
Yes, sir. Pretty cool.
D'Eriq, also, you know, the opportunity that you had to kind of sit back and see things often gives people a different perspective, right? And so, you know, to have the opportunity, we'll call it, as much as it's an unfortunate situation, what did you learn, or how did it maybe help your mindset to make you even more hungry to, hey, I want to get back and be healthy and ready for this year?
Yeah, I think like once you're in the moment, you kind of sort of take things for granted, right? Yeah. So me not being able to play the game, not being out there with my guys every single day working out and, you know, practicing with those guys, it kind of opened my eyes. Like, man, it's not here forever. We need to take advantage of the opportunity that you have. So that's why I tried to work really hard coming back from my ACL and trying to get back out there as quickly as possible.
What is it about this Miami program that people don't know? The fun side, everything. Yeah. You know, we see the turnover chains and the touchdown rings and all of that. What's it like to be a part of this program?
Man, it's great. You know, it's a lot of different personalities on the team, right? You got South Florida guys, you got Texas guys, you got guys from Georgia. And, you know, we all mesh pretty good. And I think, like, Codia used his word a lot last year, was being connected. And I truly believe that, like, we're a connected team. We're like, you know, I want to go out there and play well for Bubba Bowden. He want to go out there and play well for Mike Harley. Like, we all, like, really love each other. And every single on the weekends, Friday night, Saturday night, like, we're all together. Like, wherever one's at, we're all at. So I think that's really important to building a really good team.
Now, he told us that he mentioned Dan Marino in the conversation to you. That, I mean, you can have numbers that are only eclipsed by somebody like Dan Marino, and maybe even some that you crack on Marino. How much does the future investment conversation with Mark Whipple mean to you in that decision?
Yeah, that meant a lot. I mean, he brought an aspect to the conversation I really haven't thought about prior to him coming to me with it. So, you know, hearing my name mentioned with Dan Marino and seeing my name on the walls with Dan Marino, and, you know, as a young kid coming into the University of Pittsburgh, that's just what you strive for. You know, you want to have your career be half as good as his, and you'll be in good shape. So, you know, I'm nothing but grateful for the opportunities I've had here in this upcoming season.
We showed some of those big-time plays you made in the last five games of the season. You started slow in those first three, four games. What was the key to unlocking your game down the stretch?
I would just say, honestly, that concussion. I had the concussion that middle of the season like that. Just kind of like just washed everything out, just refocused. And I just came back with just a whole new mindset. I was like, listen, this can go either one of two ways. People are going to either remember it at the end of like the season at the end where it was bad and it was not going well, but I kind of, we turned it around, got a better on track. We were 4-1 at the end of the season, and that's what I'm just looking to carry over into this next.
You know, I mentioned that every preseason watch list, your name is on it, and the Heisman conversations, all of these things, and I know that you're very level-headed and not focused on that, but that's what the world expects from you, with the college football world. What are your expectations for this season?
Yeah, you know, I think as a team, you know, we expect to win every game. You know, and we've worked so hard this offseason. This is probably the hardest I've seen our team work is this offseason. So I think we're super excited. We're not really worrying about what the people on the outside are saying, you know. I think people have a lot of high expectations for our team, and I think the main thing for our team to think about is, you know, just because people say we're going to win 10 games, 12 games, doesn't mean it's going to happen. You know, we still have to put the work in. We still got to put the preparation in, week out. So that's kind of our mindset as a team, you know, just try to take it one step at a time.
Sam, a year ago we had a conversation prior to the opener, and you were talking about maybe losing a few pounds, things like that, trying to get better individually in addition to what you guys were doing with the team. What's been the focal point for you this offseason? Has it been – I've heard more about film and Sam Howell this year. Have you dove into video? What's been the point of emphasis for you?
Yeah, I think from a personal standpoint, definitely still trying to improve on my mobility. You know, I think we – and also this year we spent a lot of time in the film room kind of learning more about the defense side of the ball. I think another area where I spent probably most of my time is this offseason in the pocket. You know, I think I struggled in the pocket at times last year. I think – I was just inconsistent in the pocket. You know, I was off balance at times. Sometimes I was moving a little too much. And I put my O-line in a lot of bad positions last year. So I just really studied those plays and tried to emulate those situations, you know, on the practice field and try to get better at those situations. I think another area I spent a lot of time just trying to develop these younger guys. You know, everyone knows the talent we lost on the offensive side of the ball. So sure. Just trying to spend a lot of time with these younger guys just to get the timing down, stuff like that, and try to develop those guys into really good players for us.
And Sam, you mentioned how much you feel like this team has grown in the offseason, and especially developing some of the younger players to have the spring season again. How valuable has it been, and what was it like to get everybody finally back together again?
Yeah, and it was definitely just a blessing to be able to be up at school with everybody. You know, last year, you know, everyone was back home in their hometown for the whole offseason. So, you know, luckily I was here with Deami and Charlotte. We could kind of meet up and throw a little bit. It's definitely cool to have everyone kind of working together. You know, and the guys have loved it. You know, our strength staff is the best in the country. They do a really good job. So, you know, we've worked so hard, and I'm super excited about where we are moving into the season.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham continues on a kind of a pseudo football Friday, to be honest with you. Hope to get Mark back next week. Feeling a lot better, and we're looking forward to having the Pac-Man back with us, obviously, on this program. We have covered a lot of on-field stuff today. We touched on some off-the-field stuff for the last 9 or 10 days with Nicole Auerbach at the top of the hour. And I am pleased this morning to have Matt Brown, who authors the Extra Points newsletter and does a podcast tied to it with Brian Fisher called Going for Two. Incredibly insightful stuff. A good bit of it, if not all of it, Matt, deals with the business of college athletics. First of all, welcome. It's great to have you with us. Your work has been fantastic. And I want to point people to the website, which is extrapointsmb.com. The titles of the newsletters are my favorite. Like yesterday's title was, you know what my favorite thing about college sports is? All the lawyers. Day before that, one reason why EA's college sports isn't coming out in 2022, it's really dang hard to render a football stadium. I mean, there's all sorts of things here tied to the business of college sports. And let's start there. When you were running the college sites for SB Nation in your previous life, did you think we would ever have the collision of things that have happened in the last 100 days that we're having right now in major college athletics?
No, certainly not on this timetable, and certainly not all at once. It's been this running joke here in our household. Like, listen, you know, because you cover college football, you cover college sports, there's typically an ebb and flow of the season. It's like, okay, I know things are going to be super busy in September and October, and then in July, maybe I could turn off my phone for 2 weeks, or at least not 2 weeks, but get off Twitter for 2 weeks, right? And now we've had three enormous, like, you know, structural changes in college athletics, not just now with expansion, but with the potential expansion of the college football playoff and with name, image, and likeness, completely changing the financial relationships and the business relationships between players and brands and schools. And it's all happened at once. You almost forget that we're actually going to allegedly play football games in a few weeks.
Yeah, well, you're right about that. I'm going to ask you kind of where Nicole and I wrapped up. You think the ship has sailed? We're going to go to 12 here? Or do you think the voice of the student athletes and coaches who have expressed concern about the 12-game playoff and the length of the season does have some value in the discussions of that CFP management committee?
Well, I think it absolutely should have value. And when we look at changing the postseason format or the season format of any other major league that we care about, the voice of the actual athletes has a significant amount of importance. Now, for professional sports, they have a collective bargaining agreement. They have unions, and the management has to listen to them. And when we've looked at, especially last season, when there was, some credible arguments that playing the season as scheduled was, if not dangerous, at least risky, and many college athletes raised concerns about that, by and large, they got rolled. And so I don't want to bet money or conclusively state, like, yes, the athletes are going to stand in the way and prevent something that management actually wants to do, but they should be listened to. And if an athlete says, listen, playing a 16-game season at this level with this intensity is really difficult and it's not fair, that's something that should be listened to. In a perfect world, I think, if we expand the playoff, I think we should look at either expanding scholarship sizes or decreasing the number of regular season games. I don't think a lot of fans would complain too much if we traded the SoCon Saturday for an extra playoff round.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. The only question would be, and this is where I think your newsletter and the work you guys have done is really invaluable, the revenue streams, and I picked up on your work during the pandemic because I thought you guys had great insight into the financials that were going back and forth with or without, you know, the virus, with or without games. Do you sense that we're getting back to normal? And you mentioned, you know, if we're going to expand the playoff, reducing the regular season, Matt, I can't think of a major college school in Power Five that would want to lose any home dates at this point. The revenue is too valuable on all fronts, it would seem like, to say, okay, we're going to, you know, cancel a full schedule of games for maybe four games in a playoff round.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And that's, it goes back to, if we look at what a professional league would do, it's bringing all of the stakeholders together and then actually having some kind of negotiation. And what we have right now, I think, you know, you raise a really good point. There's not really a way for everybody involved to be completely heard. Getting rid of one regular season game, even if that's a regular season game against an FCS opponent or, a MAC school that fans and broadcasters are not going to be super invested in, that's still a major date for local hotels. That's still a major date for anybody that sells merch locally. And you're right. That's millions of dollars in tickets sold and hot dogs sold and parking spaces and all of these other things. So you would need somebody else to step in and say, you're going to get X and you're going to have to give up Y. And there's not really an efficient way for any of those conversations. And I think that kind of dovetails into what we're seeing now with SEC expansion and with some of these other big structural changes in college athletics. There's not a high degree of trust between all of these individual actors. And there's a major incentive to come in and look out for your own immediate local interests rather than the interests of anything collectively. What's good for college athletics? What's good for all universities here? And if you don't have that, you end up with decisions that maybe don't look as good six or seven years down the road.
All right. Let's go to the realignment line here, because that's the next we could spend 2 hours on name, image, and likeness, and you and I don't have nearly enough time today to go through all the things other than to say if we don't get some rule galvanizing name, image, and likeness, we're probably going to be in trouble. That all being said, realignment. Today, your newsletter deals with the lower level of football bowl subdivision game. I mean, Southland, Sun Belt, American, Conference USA, all those. I'm looking at the nature of the realignment here as we look at the sport in conjunction with the NCAA. Nicole spoke to us about the vulnerability of the National Collegiate Athletic Association, where it's basically become just an administrative and paperwork arm of management and enforcement and things like that. In your mind, are we going to see a split down the road on this?
You know, I've spent the bulk of my career arguing, I don't really think a split is likely. I don't really think a split is something that people, when the rubber hits the road, really want, especially when you think about college basketball. Because there may be a compelling argument that the value is overwhelmingly driven in college football by the major brands. What makes the NCAA men's and women's tournaments such attractive events, not just for broadcasters and for fans, and let's face it, also people who like to gamble, is because they like having the A-Sun and the Patriot League and the Big Sky involved. It's the quality of the event diminishes if your Cinderella is a 7-9 Big Ten team. So there's a big incentive to not break away. But after everything we've seen for the last week, especially, you know, I think Nicole has brought up some really good points with the SEC now potentially bringing in as much revenue as the NCAA does as a whole. And if you have that kind of administrative and financial disparity, I think it is going to be difficult to keep the band back to completely together. And there's going to be some very difficult conversations over the next several months about what exactly do we want the NCAA to even be in 2021? And what does it mean then for Alabama and Alabama State and MAC schools and Big Ten schools and Horizon League schools to all share the same administrative umbrella? Because inertia has been this very powerful force. And right now, I'm not sure there's consensus agreement about what we even want any of this to be. And so could there be a split? Could there be something at the Knight Commission imagined where FBS football is a completely separate entity and the NCAA runs everything else? Could we have 6 or 7 different sports-specific NCAAs? I think it's all on the table right now.
Yeah. Let's wrap with this. A lot of people tend to ask you about the college football video game that EA Sports has announced is returning. How in the world has this become such a hot topic? And yeah, I get the demographic, but there are a lot of people who are like vested in college athletics that want to know about this product. And believe it or not, I had a couple players talk to me about it last week in Charlotte. You know, when do you think the game's coming back? I mean, you know, you're in broadcasting. I find it to be a fascinating conversation right now.
It's been so funny because I've had this variations of the same conversation with a lot of athletic directors, you know, folks that didn't grow up with this video game or play it a lot and going like, I don't understand what the big hullabaloo is. But if you're somebody that I think is around my age, you know, I'm 34, the video game was an enormous part of my social life in college and in high school. And it's a way here as a marketing arm for many of these universities to let the world know that they exist outside of their own little area, right? Like I grew up in Ohio. I'm not ashamed to admit this. I learned what some HBCUs literally were through the video game because they weren't local to where I was. People in my social circle weren't going to Morgan State or to Florida A&M, but I could play them on the video game. And then, now I got to get to know their uniforms and what their stadium looks like and what their fight song looks like. And that's something everybody badly wants a piece of. And now with name, image, and likeness moving forward here, and with all of these schools looking for ways to dig into the couch cushions to find a couple more nickels and dimes in new revenue, the video game is a very attractive thing. It's something that consumers want. It's something that schools want. It's something that EA wants. I could write literally any small transactional thing about this development, and I know people are going to want to read about it. Like there's this is going to sell a gajillion copies.
All right, here's the last thing. This has nothing to do with college sports. Instead, it's a tweet you had this week, and I'm curious to know the reaction you got for it. You tweeted earlier this week, your Olympic thought of the day. Could a great high school swimmer beat an Olympian in the 100 free if the Olympian had to swim wearing like 3 pairs of jeans? How many pairs of jeans would it take? Maybe 3 jeans and a Carhartt jacket. What kind of response did you get, Matt?
Well, the timing here was terrible because I tweeted this, and then like 20 minutes later, a high school swimmer wins a gold medal, right? And I'm like, okay, well listen, clearly I'm not talking about an international grade high school swimmer. I'm talking about the person who is, you know, finishes second in their conference in the 100 free in your local meet. And I was talking about this with my wife, who swam competitively in high school and had some Division III offers. And she's like, if you were going against an Olympic swimmer, they could put in like six Carhartt jackets and they'd be doggy paddling and you would still lose. It was definitely a fun, you know, Twitter's supposed to be fun. So this was a fun thing to do. I would love to see the old joke is like, we got to have a regular person competing in the Olympics so we can have some kind of sense for how amazing a lot of these international athletes are for sports we're not familiar with. I say, that's not good enough. Let's have an average person and then let's handicap the Olympian and then really kind of hammer in that scope. I want to see swimmers in Carhartt jackets. Make it happen.
Yeah. Good call. Hey, great work. I can't tell you how much I enjoy the newsletter every day. I would encourage folks, log on extrapointsmb.com, see some of the stuff. You do take subscriptions. It's a great piece, and if you're working this business, it's invaluable insight. Matt, I appreciate your time today on the show.
Oh, and listen, it's my pleasure. Anytime, and thank you so much for the kind words.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Number one, I've got the greatest gig in America. My commute is 16 steps. 16. I never leave the basement, right? My wife feeds me. She feels sorry for me and takes care of me. My life is fantastic. Bojangles, biscuit, got dog treats. Check that out. I've been saying on radio shows when I got started 800 years ago. I got a theory, Marvin. I've been saying this. The second your big toe hits the water, you're the visiting team.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Right? Hey, we're just in our basements with dogs trying to win another Emmy. There's certain things in the world that you should not see. That would be me in the singlet. We'll give you some BPI. Bad picks indeed. That's what we'll give you.
Put that singlet on with a little bourbon, you'll be all set.
Well, this is like a TV show.
The hounds, unleash the hounds. I might have the greatest gig on the planet. I have only one good knee, but I've got plenty of bourbon. So, I mean, I'm good.
Like you, we're all ready for the return of the Pac-Man, and we hope next week is the week. So we'll see you on Monday for that. But I've asked a lot of people this week and heard from a lot of people. Mark is doing much better. Talked to him last night a little bit, and hopefully he'll be with us Monday. How's that? So we're looking forward to seeing him on Monday at 7 a.m. as we re-rock a Packer in Durham for you right here on ACC Network. Last night, NBA draft, boy, Florida State, your sixth man has been taken in the top five each of the last 2 years. Scotty Barnes headlines, seven guys taken, four in the first round, Scotty Barnes, Trey Murphy of Virginia, Jalen Johnson of Duke, Dayron Sharpe of North Carolina, two more Noles in the second round, Koprivica and Raekwon Gray, and David Johnson of Louisville went 47th to Toronto. Some news this morning. Justin Champagne has signed a free agent deal with Toronto. It's being reported Carlique Jones is going to Dallas. Jose Alvarado on a two-way to New Orleans. Amir Sims to the New York Knicks. And Sam Hauser of Virginia will be with the Boston Celtics. There is no word yet on the ACC Player of the Year, Moses Wright, who was at one point rising up draft charts but was not selected in the two rounds last night. We'll stay tuned for that detail and pass it along to you on Monday. We will be in full countdown next week, kids, because, well, heck, we're 34 days away from NC State and South Florida as it is. Practices begin on campuses next week. So we look forward to following those and talking to folks as camps open up around the ACC footprint. Don't forget the ACC football road trip starts on Wednesday at NC State at 7 o'clock.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.